at the end of the day, when you are out there in the middle of this country with everything you own in your trailer completely free and clear and detached from, we can call it the system, you find truth, you find reality. And at the bottom of that barrel, there's just love. There's just God. There's just your true soul essence. We have way more in common than we do in differences. We are all connected. We are all in this awakening journey together, and we really are powerful. We, the people, is 99% of the people.
The more that we said yes to the experiences that God brought into our awareness, the deeper and deeper and deeper we got in communion with God and being able to listen to God's voice and frequency in nature, in other people, in each other.
I am divinely protected, and I'm going to be divinely protected on this. And as long as I stay walking with God, I will be okay. My entire perception of physical and spiritual reality has been profoundly altered through being in union and communion with the earth and the people and ourselves. Get out there and see the world, because you will be shocked when you realize how much of your worldview has been shaped by everything but reality of firsthand experiencing it.
The power that we have as individuals walking this path to help heal, to help hold space for communities. We are here to hold that space and to help alchemize that group consciousness and bring the frequency of love into these spaces. There's this call back home to community that we've seen very clear throughout the country. And part of that journey of returning back into community is doing the healing work.
We always asked the same question to a lot of these communities. And that question was, what is the greatest challenge that you face? Every single person we asked, you might be surprised to hear, said the same thing. And that answer was the people, relating, being in community with other people, conflict. Are we relating consciously? Are we relating in a way that is loving and intentional and effective and embodied?
We look at these cities on the extreme end of humanization, and we wonder why we're experiencing challenges with mental and spiritual health. It is going and being in union with nature that heals us, that brings us back home to our true selves.
Do we bring a deeper consciousness to being in communion with our earth and realizing, no, actually, we are in their space and we have dominion, which means stewardship, over this realm, and what a sacred role that that really is.
Welcome home to the Loving Consciously podcast.
My name is Amaris.
And my name is Eric.
And if you are like us, nobody taught you how to love. We are best friends and life partners here to vulnerably and authentically share our journey while exploring the sacred realms of love, consciousness, relationships, spirituality, and all that they encompass.
The intention of this show is to help you consciously relate to yourself, others, and everything else in this universe. Together, we can embody a more intentional and fulfilling way of giving and receiving love.
Loving consciously. Through 8 years together, we have had the opportunity to overcome deep patterning and programming, as well as trauma related to mental health, addiction, pregnancy loss, infidelity, and immense grief. After 6 years of experiencing these challenges with no knowledge on how to heal or love each other, we separated.
After us both spiritually awakening and recommitting, we formed our conscious partnership and have spent the last 2 years cultivating a divine union founded on unconditional love, devotion, and commitment to personal growth.
Thank you for joining us and doing the work alongside us as we explore this beautiful world of love and consciousness to co-create a new world of love.
As you courageously walk this path, remember to have grace with yourself and know that you have both the capacity to love consciously and the power to always choose love. Blessed day, family, and welcome back to the Loving Consciously podcast. We are so grateful to have you with us here today.
It has been 3 weeks since part one of this episode aired, Our RV Exodus, a revelation of love and God. And we are so excited to be back here today to bring you part two. In these last 3 weeks, we have navigated a couple of different travel adventures and some shamanic healing, aka sickness, and it's been really intense. It's been really beautiful. We're actually going to save a lot of what came out of that for another episode. It has been a lot of activations and experiences around leadership and stepping into leadership. And so we're going to give that its own space. Today, though, we are going to give the second and I hope final part of this RV journey. I just want to recap the last episode. If you have not listened to it, we do please, please request that you go listen to it before listening to this one. It is the really important groundwork of dismantling our lives and our identities and preparing to the moment that we drove off from Portland, Oregon to start this journey. I also want to provide a reminder, if you go to my Instagram, at AmorousLovesYou, you can see in my story highlights on my page, God Art Part 1, 2, and 3 are all of the national parks of the U.S. and the Exodus highlight, which is this whole journey documented. And if you love puppy dogs, you can also see the one that says Fur Angels, and it shows our puppy's journey, our four dogs that came with us through this journey and what that was for them. So getting into today, we are literally going to go through our whole 13 months of 48 states, 47 national parks, all three coastlines, and three Canada provinces. And we're just going to take it step by step and talk about what we saw, what we experienced, what we learned, some of our favorite places, wild experiences. It really is all centered around this core theme of communion. Communion with nature, communion with the people, communion with God, and communion with each other, and ultimately communion with our true selves. Throughout this journey, it was just this constant state of coming into deeper communion with those realities of life here on this planet. You know, focusing in on nature, nature is our greatest teacher. Like, nature has everything that we need physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally to survive and thrive in this world. And something that was really powerful in this journey was not only connecting to that nature, but coming into a state of communion where we had no choice but to lower our resource use and get really intimate with our resource use. And what I mean by this is most people live in a city or live in a place with running water and sewer and electricity coming from some type of utility provider. And so for us on this journey, we had to get really intimate with our waste, our garbage, where our water was coming from. Water quality was a really big thing on the road. And it was just this really profound lesson in being very acutely aware of how much resources we're using and where they're coming from.
It was a really beautiful and impactful lesson to go out and be in this self-contained trailer and be in that intimate relationship with our resource use and our waste and all these experiences, because there was no degree of separation anymore. We were fully in charge of our life, our resources, and what this family needed, and how we were impacting the earth wherever we went. And so there was this really beautiful relationship that developed with Mother Earth as we continued throughout our travels, as we became more conscious of the way that we were interacting with her. And by the end of the trip, I mean, we were completely different people. The way we lived was completely changed. And I can say that we were in absolute communion with the earth and the natural rhythms, and being in the state of flow with her. And part of that was just in, you know, incremental steps of where are we getting our power? How can we get it from a natural resource, right? Including solar power into the trailer and finding natural water resources and finding ways to clean up our product use and the things that we put into our bodies so that our waste does not harm the earth.
It is a very different way of life when you know exactly how much water it takes to do your dishes or shower or flush a toilet, or when you have a set amount of water or power or food, any resource, and it needs to last you a certain amount of time. You become much more acutely aware of these things when you don't just have access to unlimited resources. The second portion of this was communion with the people. One of the biggest lessons we took away from this is we are all one. And really deconstructing these programmed beliefs that America is so divided and this narrative that the news wants to put out, while a large portion of Americans may have differing political views, we are not our political views. There is so much more to the being that we are. And getting out there and meeting literally thousands of people across this entire country on an election year, we realized we have way more in common than we do in differences. And the large majority of the people, almost everyone we interacted with, just wants freedom and happiness and peace and success. Like, we all want each other to succeed. And we all recognize that we've reached a critical mass point where if we don't start working together and choosing love and honoring our earth, we're not going to have a healthy and sustainable place to have differences in. And so that was a huge part of this. And in that deep communion, just really realizing we are all one big family and we're in this together. And there is far more we the people than there is the few thousand people that are in quote unquote perceived political power.
It was a really healing journey to go and commune with our brothers and sisters throughout this country, because exiting our old life, there was a part of me that had really taken in the indoctrination of separateness. That is the narrative of this country, truly believing that, you know, in many ways this country was lost and fragmented and broken, and in sitting and holding space with and communing with so many people, I began to realize that we really are so much more similar than we are different. And what the media and social media likes to focus on a lot is differences, key differences. And where we put our energy and our attention, that's what gets amplified. And in sitting with so many people, I just realized, yeah, like you said, there's this wholesomeness to humanity right now, and a deep desire for intimate human connection. There's this call back home to community that we've seen very clear throughout the country. And part of that journey of returning back into community is doing the healing work, and is taking the steps to really heal and become a whole and complete container so that we can come back together in love.
It's a perfect segue into this part about the other part of communing with the people is realizing, first and foremost, this really deep need for deep healing and for, yeah, just for really deep healing. You know, this millennia and ancestral line of trauma and of separation and of victim consciousness has really reached this pivotal point that it's really asking to be integrated and transmuted. And so that was also really evident, and seeing, you know, this great awakening, as people call it, driving this whole country and seeing these people and going to, you know, triple digit farms and communities and events and all these different things, I really got to see the profound reality of the fact that we the people are waking up. Everyone that we talked to in some way, shape, or form was waking up, whether it was to the political corruption, to things around health freedom, to things around spiritual realities. People are waking up. And it was so encouraging to see that, because what is our proverb here at Loving Consciously? Awaken, heal, love. We first have to have awareness. We have to wake up and gain awareness to the things that need healing. Then we can heal them. And once we fully heal and embody and transmute that, then we can be that love and be in that new world of love. So the awakening is the first stage, and we are really in that stage collectively. You know, there are those of us who are the way showers who are deep in the healing stage and working towards, you know, embodying that love. for the greater masses, they are in that awakening stage. And that was really encouraging to see, and just to see people asking questions and getting back out on the land, starting to grow their own food, starting to take their health back, starting to take their power back from the system. And, you know, we could sit here and record hundreds of hours of content on why that happened. And, you know, a lot of people project negativity of like, oh, well, the government let us down, or they're corrupt, or whatever it is. And that's such a disempowering view. At the end of the day, it all happened perfectly for our evolution. And if in the end it prompted people to start waking up and taking their power back, then it was for the greater good. And that is divine will and grace, right? Is using everything for our higher good. And so just communing with the people and seeing we are all connected, we are all in this awakening journey together, and we really are powerful. Like, we, the people, is 99% of the people in this country.
Yeah. And that's a really important point that you made there around God using everything for our greatest good. Because in that awakening stage, I mean, I remember what it was like for me. And the way I perceived it in the moment was peak and acute suffering. And what I did see in a lot of our brothers and sisters as we traveled was this underlying tone of, yeah, suffering, of just experiencing the pain and allowing themselves to feel it and allowing themselves to bear witness to what is actually going on in this world. And for a lot of people who may not yet have the awareness of God's greater plan and spiritual healing, that can look like a really dark and grim reality. And I'd love to just bring a reminder here that that suffering is the catalyst for us to wake up and grow. And I would love to encourage all of us to hold our brothers and sisters in a state of grace and empathy and compassion as they navigate the awakening stage, because we all know what it's like. We all know what it's like to experience a really challenging catalyst in our own life. And those catalysts have uniquely positioned us as healers and way showers and people living from the heart to hold space for our brothers and sisters who are waking up. Our responsibility to be the hands and arms of God, to hold our brothers and sisters in love as we make this a great transition from living in the shadow to being aware of the shadow, so that we can then heal it and return to love.
Absolutely. The last part here before we get into talking about this journey is this communion with God and with each other and with our true selves. And we're going to get way more into that as this goes on, so I'll keep it brief here. But it really was just this profound revelation. The title of this episode is perfect. Profound revelation of God and of this love that we share together, and of our true selves when we strip away the identities and patterns and routines and jobs and all of the things that we thought we were in our old corporate America city life. At the end of the day, when you are out there in the middle of this country with everything you own in your trailer, completely free and clear and detached from, we can call it the system, you find truth. You find reality. And at the bottom of that barrel, there's just love. There's just God. There's just your true soul essence. And that was so beautiful.
This communion with God is something unlike I have ever experienced. And that deep, deep meeting of ourselves and finding God on the road, in the nature, in the surrender, in the protection that we received. We'll see that peppered out throughout our story, but I just want to give space here to really acknowledge that God was present with us from the very beginning, before we even ever started this journey. And for me, it actually took the majority of the journey to even realize God's presence and become aware of it in my life. And it was just really beautiful to see that journey of a return to God and a return to God through all of the different aspects of our journey, because everything is that essence of God.
Absolutely. All right, so 13 months, we did it. We saw the whole country. In the part one of this, we left off on the day that we pulled away. That right there, the day that we pulled away. And we headed off from Portland, Oregon for California. And we actually spent 3.5 months in California. A quarter of our trip was spent in one state. California is massive. There's 9 national parks, many, 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 many cities. And we were really just going slow, integrating into this lifestyle. It was winter because we left at the end of October. So this was November, December, January. So we just spent a nice kind of slow winter exploring California and spending time in Northern California and just really being in this newfound constant state of surrender to God's will and guidance, and also this concept of divine protection that you mentioned. So at the start of this, we went to the Redwoods, and there was a really powerful experience of driving, and I'll let you tell a little bit about that before we carry on.
Yeah, I mean, we had just left our home and everything behind in Oregon and embarked on this journey with, you know, some confidence from the trial runs that we had done. But this was the real thing, right? We were finally driving out, and it was just me, Amaris, and God, and our 4 very lovely puppy dogs. And we're driving to our first destination, and in the evening, as it got dark, we're approaching the Redwoods, and the brake connector that connects the trailer to the vehicle actually came unplugged, and we were not aware of this. And so we're driving through the dark, windy roads of Northern California through the Redwoods without any brakes and without any trailer lights, which is extremely dangerous. And I remember we got to a downhill portion of coming down the mountain, and the trailer wouldn't stop. And there was this stark moment of fear inside my body of, are we going to be okay? And it really asked me to regulate my nervous system and operate in faith and surrender to God's protection, right? Because I was no longer in control in that moment. And through the grace of God, we did arrive safely at our RV park. We realized what had happened, and we were able to get it fixed on the road. But it was a really impactful reminder of, it really is just us now. It really is just us. And God is there protecting us no matter what comes up.
Yeah, I don't think I quite have words to explain that in our first few days of this journey, we had this, I mean, I don't want to sound dramatic and say near-death experience, but having gotten to the RV park and realized we were driving at night in these very steep redwood highway roads with no brakes, no brake lights, was really intense. And it really brought me to this surrender and awareness of the fact that I am at the mercy of God. And also, I am divinely protected, and I'm going to be divinely protected on this. And as long as I stay walking with God, I will be okay. And really realizing we are about to face some of the most extreme situations, environments, cultures, ideologies, like all of it. We are going to see it all. And staying in that alignment, staying in that resonance with God and with surrender and with love and with truth is of the utmost importance. And so it happened perfectly because right out the gate, it set that tone of like, okay, this is very real. Driving is one of the most dangerous things you will ever do in your life. And we're about to drive 50,000 miles across this entire country on every major and minor highway. towing our house, which is significantly more dangerous for a plethora of reasons, we must go with God, and we must go aligned and in surrender and with deep presence. You can't just kind of like willy-nilly start towing your house. Like, you need to be on it. You need to be paying attention to the roads, to your tires, to different things, because it could be a very life-threatening situation. And so that was just a really great tone setter of this trip, of like, be present, be with God, be aware, and really be in this state of surrender and alignment with divine will and divine protection. We ended up spending our winter in San Diego, which spending winter on the beach in San Diego was not a super bad experience. That was a really cool experience. You know, having gone down this entire state of California and making it down to San Diego, it was pretty sweet, I'm not gonna lie, to just kind of be sitting there for a month in San Diego for winter. It was really nice. And we also had the opportunity to tow our house over to Tucson, back home for the holidays, and then go right back to our happy place in San Diego before we carried on with this journey.
Yeah. And, you know, California, for all that it was, such a beautiful state. I mean, the nature there, we got to stop and go move slowly as we kind of integrated into this way of life, and spent a lot of time at the national parks and the redwoods when we did stay there. That was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. The magnitude of those trees, I mean, there was no way to walk through that forest and not feel the divine presence of God, because it was just this awe-inspiring feat of nature that was both humbling and empowering at the same time, to see what this planet is capable of, what life is capable of, and where we fit into it all.
Yeah, absolutely. California is massive, and there is so much to see. And one of the biggest things that came of that portion for me was I'd realized how much my worldview, but definitely my view of California specifically was shaped by pop culture, by politics, by the news, and really just getting out there and seeing it. I mean, it is its own country in itself. It is so diverse. There are so many climates. There are so many cultures. There are so many cities. And yeah, I just had this very narrow and warped view of what California was. And it was so ironic because I had said so much in my life, I will never live in California. Like, California sucks, you know, traffic. Like, I just had all of these views, and experiencing the entire state for 3.5 months, I realized, wow, there's actually like some really beautiful and epic stuff here. And the irony in the end was, our top place that we ended up wanting to live when this journey was over ended up being in Northern California. And so that already was life-changing for me, of realizing everything that I believe was told to me or put on to me through something else, whether it was school, history, whether it was news and media, music, pop culture, Hollywood, right? Like, the large majority of the population, their views on America are shaped by something else, not by personally having gone out and experienced it. I cannot recommend this journey enough. Even if you can't do the whole thing, even if you just do it for a month, a couple of months, half of it, do it in chunks, get out there and see the country. Get out there and see the world, because you will be shocked when you realize how much of your worldview has been shaped by everything but reality of firsthand experiencing it. After we left California, we drove through Nevada very quickly. There's nothing in Nevada. There's just literally nothing in Nevada. And we ended up in Arizona and spent several weeks in Sedona, which was really beautiful. And just really seeing this, yeah, different perspective of Sedona and how we kind of see these congregations of light in these places. And Sedona, it's almost as if the energy is so powerful and so concentrated, it feels really ungrounded and really unbalanced in ways. And so it was really beautiful to spend time there. You know, we didn't really do much else in Arizona because we're from Arizona, so we'd already spent a lot of time there. It's very interesting driving your home back through your home state that you've lived away from for, you know, almost 5 years now.
It was in many ways a really healing experience because we were able to go back through our hometown and go back through some of the places that we'd visited in our younger years from a new frame of consciousness and be able to really heal and commune with the desert in ways that we hadn't before. And so it was the first step to really healing our relationship to our hometown and our home state. And I would agree with you with Sedona, though. The energy and the nature there is very beautiful and very potent, very powerful. And as we see a lot with just the spiritual space in general, people can flock to trends and bring their energy into that space. And it becomes more of a spiritual tourism experience rather than embodied, grounded spirituality. And so we were able to see the dichotomy between both of those experiences and really allow that to sink into our awareness. And yeah, Nevada was, there was pretty much nothing there. I mean, other than, you know, Reno was nice and there's a beautiful river that runs through Reno and there was some consciousness there around food. And yeah, there was some placemaking happening there in Reno. And Vegas is its whole other own experience, right? There's this like deep presence of the shadow and the fallen consciousness there. Underlying that, there's also a lot of wholesomeness to Vegas in the greater Vegas area. Apparently there is a large spiritual community there and there are energetic vortexes and spaces in there.
Absolutely. And it was so incredibly healing to go into this place that we had partied in and experienced, you know, a lot of our dark moments in and used as an escapism tool in several really intense trips of partying in Vegas, to come back with this frame of consciousness and walk the strip in the daylight sober and just give this place love and heal some of those, again, warped views of like, this is such a like a dark, you know, place, and realizing like nothing is that polarized, nothing is that black and white. And we hold these really deep subconscious, it's like unconscious, you know, thoughts and beliefs. We all have them. And I would just really encourage you, you know, when you think about California or Las Vegas or any place in this country and something comes up, a thought, a belief, an opinion, really question that. Like, start to inquiry yourself on that and tear that down and say, where is this coming from? And do I know this to be true? Why do I think this is true? Where did this thought come from? Have I experienced that thing from this frame of consciousness with love and looked for the light in it? Because spoiler alert, when you look for the light, you will find it, because the light is in everything. After that, we went to New Mexico and we spent 2 weeks in New Mexico. And it was really interesting because I actually didn't have any like one way or the other thoughts about New Mexico. I was just like, eh, it's New Mexico. Like, I don't really know what's there. We actually really liked Santa Fe, and I actually really liked Santa Fe a lot. And Taos was incredible. And even Roswell and Las Cruces, there's actually some really cool places in New Mexico. And so getting to experience a state that I lived right next to, drove through on road trips, and really get in there and see all of the cities. And, you know, one of our favorite national parks was there. Carlsbad Caverns was exquisite. Like those caves, we went to 3 cave national parks, and those ones, hands down the best. Highly recommend Carlsbad. And also the White Sand Dunes, like realizing that the Great White Sand Dunes National Park is crushed up selenite gypsum sand was really epic. And so, yeah, it was like this blank spot where I was like, eh, there's like, I feel nothing towards this place. And in the end, we spent 2 weeks there and we absolutely loved New Mexico.
Yeah. And this is kind of a microcosm of an experience that continued to happen throughout the trip as well, is having either a perceived notion of what a place is like, or just like a blank slate and having no idea what about the state whatsoever, and then actually having really incredible and wholesome experiences there. I mean, the vastness of White Sands National Park was really awe-inspiring. This is God in nature. To go out and just be completely free and letting the dogs go and run as fast as they want to run to their heart's content and see the freedom in their experience as well, and have that really heal a portion of that within me, because, you know, there was a lot of stress in acclimating to this new way of life for me. But I remember that leg of the trip really like getting to New Mexico and starting to get into a groove, starting to get into a state of flow and just communion with where God was leading us. And that's where I think the freedom really started to set in for me, of just, we can go wherever God leads us. We can pick up our house, we can go, and we can experience the world.
Yeah, I love that you touched so much on the dogs, because it is really understated that we not only did this, we did it with four dogs. We obviously don't have living children, but having four dogs, you know, they came with us everywhere. These dogs have been to almost every single national park. There was only a few that didn't allow them. They hiked Mount Shasta in the snow with us. They were on the sand dunes with us. And, you know, just getting to watch them experience this world and, yeah, be free dogs. They were the best road dogs ever. And to be able to show people, you can do this. If we can do this with four dogs, you can do this with a couple of kids. And yeah, something I think that really shifted in New Mexico for me was I was really starting to, it started with the Grand Canyon, and then it really solidified in New Mexico, which, if you want a spiritual experience, go see the Grand Canyon at least once in your life. Go see this massive canyon and tune into the fact that most of it is shut down and hidden from humans, because that started to really get my gears going of like, oh, the government actually like has a lot of control and secrecy around these national parks, and there's a reason for that. And when we went to New Mexico and we were in Carlsbad Caverns, which is, I can't even put into words, this magnificent cave system, I realized the sheer vastness and mind-bending reality of what is underneath us. Like, we live our lives as a greater collective on the surface of this earth, not really thinking about what's going on beneath our feet. And, you know, there's both the nature aspect of what is going on inside below this surface of this earth, and what is going on with the underground tunnels and human trafficking. And I started to get really in tune with, I believed my whole world was up here on the surface, and I became aware of there's an entire other massive portion below the surface. And so just an invitation to really tune into that when you're walking around your city or nature or wherever you are, there's a whole other world beneath your feet that you may not be aware of.
That's really powerful. I mean, yeah, going back into that space and in those caverns, it really shifted my mindset of what is possible underneath the surface of the earth. And then beyond that, what is possible just outside of my current experience, right? This world is so vast and there's so much going on. And it was just a really expansive experience. Another beautiful aspect of New Mexico for me was also just experiencing some really exquisite things, like going to Santa Fe and going to their downtown plaza and market. We got to experience some incredible food, some incredible craftsmanship, and just to start to see the level of exquisiteness that's possible when humans really put their minds on something. And going to Taos and experiencing some of the best cacao that we've ever had, and communing with very spiritual space and hot springs, and visiting the Earthship community of people who are trying to build in union with the earth, like really starting to shift our mindset of what is possible, because there are humans out here doing exquisite things.
Yeah. Speaking of exquisite, I realized I did want to touch on a lot more of the national parks, and there's just so much to cover in this. You know, we just can't possibly go through it all. Like I said, there's 9 of them in California alone, and, you know, a couple in Arizona and a couple in New Mexico. And so we're seeing them all. You know, in California, I really want to call out Joshua Tree, and, you know, Joshua Tree National Park is a world wonder, in my opinion. Like, it is so spiritual and sacred. There is something very deep and ancestral and native to these lands and many of the parks in California, you know. And then you kind of see these, like, Yosemites, for example, and everyone was like, oh, I want to go to Yosemite. And we would tell them that would actually be at the bottom of my list because it's so commercialized. And don't get me wrong, it's beautiful. And there's so much magic in some of these smaller parks, like Lassen and Pinnacles, and Kings Canyon was beautiful.
Kings Canyon was a gem.
And so, yeah, just, you know, get out and see as many national parks as you can. They're honestly incredible. You know, Grand Canyon, Saguaro National Park, we literally lived right next to it for most of our lives. And I never went and, like, deeply explored it. I know you did, but seeing those massive saguaros and just this beautiful ancient desert is really just something very powerful to experience. So at this point, we have done, what, 4 states.
Yeah.
And we land in Texas, and we end up spending 6 weeks in Texas. This was actually our first monthly stay that we booked. We made it to Austin, and to say that we fell in love is an understatement. There was a very palpable moment of we booked the RV park that we are currently living in right now, and we literally said, I could live here. And it was the first time we'd ever said that. And granted, we're not super far along in this journey, but it actually ended up being the only RV park we ever said that at. And here we are living at it now. So it was this first taste of what was to come and really getting to experience what we've dubbed the City of Light. And we've talked a lot about that, so I won't go deep into it. But something that happened in our 6 weeks in Texas, there are 2 things I really want to talk about. And the first one is Big Bend. Big Bend National Park is a trek to get there. It is so worth it. That experience changed my life. It healed my relationship to the desert, and it is just such a beautiful desert, like being right there on the border. And it really started to deconstruct in my mind the concept of borders, and just like standing on one side of a river and on the other side of the river is another country, and realizing like this crazy concept of borders and of countries and of ownership that the greater system has constructed, and just how silly it is when you go and stand on the border of a river, like God's earth, the earth, and have a fictitious system tell you that one's Mexico and this one's America, and you're depending on which side of the river you were born on is what citizen you are and who you answer to, was really silly.
Yeah, I mean, that in itself is just a massive revelation. I mean, on one side of the border, you're subject to a certain set of laws. And on one side of the border, you're subject to a different set of laws. And it really begs the question of whose laws are they, right? Is it really God's law, or is it man-made constructs that we are all following? And so that was a really big activation for both of us there. Also, like you said, the healing of the desert. I mean, the water that's flowing there was beautiful. There's hot springs, there's cold springs, there's just massive fields of mica. If you can go visit Big Bend National Park, the mountain range is beautiful, and definitely go in the spring if possible, because the desert blossoms that are opening up at that time, the colors are unreal.
Yeah, the second big thing that came out of our time in Texas was going to our first year at Confluence. And we also have an episode about that way back when, a year ago. There was a palpable moment. So at this point, we are about 6 months into this journey. We've been on the road, and we go into this event and we realize, wow, we have actually entered an entirely new realm and reality and way of living. You know, for everyone else, they are still living in the cities, in the system, in the 9-to-5, in the matrix, if you will. They take a vacation and come to this event and then they go back. For us, this was our way of life. We're always living free and sovereign and outside of the confines of time. And I really realized through this constant movement, and most importantly, through being in union and communion with the earth and the people and ourselves, that we had transcended the construct of time, the human understanding of time, because our life revolved around sunlight. Because towing or parking your house in the dark is not a fun experience. And so we were, through this situation, given the opportunity to be in natural rhythms of life. Our schedule of travels was built 100% around the weather. So we were living very deeply in tune to the seasons and again, the sunlight and the time. And so here we are 6 months in, we get to Confluence and we go to interact in this massive event for the first time. We've kind of been out in nature and exploring the world on our own in a bubble for 6 months. And I realized coming into contact with these people and this community that my entire perception of physical and spiritual reality has been profoundly altered.
Yeah, I mean, our whole way of life had shifted by that point. We were living in full communion and surrender with God. I mean, the way that this event even came into our awareness was just, we were on a call with a friend and he was like, have you heard of this event? It seems like it would be in alignment for you. And it was one of the first experiences that we continued to see throughout our travels of God speaking to us through the people around us and using other people as a vehicle to guide us. And the more that we said yes to the experiences that God brought into our awareness, the deeper and deeper and deeper we got in communion with God and being able to listen to God's voice and frequency in nature, in other people, in each other.
Yeah. And you kind of understated there, the event happened to be where we were going to be at that time in Texas. Yeah, and so definitely. It was divine alignment for sure. After doing that, we are sitting in this RV park that we now live in Austin, and we decided to boop over to New Orleans. So we drove through Mississippi and Louisiana and then back. So we kind of went the southern route over and then the northern route back to Austin. And that was a very interesting experience. That was, I feel, truly the first experience of really tuning us into collective consciousness and grid work and some of these things I'm going to talk about here. At this point, we had been doing very deep conscious and spiritual work. That was not new. And going into New Orleans, though, I became very attuned to what happens in a space, in a city, in a community, when something happens and there is this unresolved trauma, this stagnated energy, if you will. Being in that city, you could still very palpably feel the energy from Katrina. And it had been many, many, many years since then. And I just became very aware of, sometimes in the space people will call it like an egregor, but just like this consciousness, this energy of this place, and how when we don't have people going into these spaces with deep wisdom and awareness and activations around shamanism and grid work and ancestral healing and consciously working with the land and the people and the energy grids, it really takes that to heal, right? Like, it's healing is a very, it's way more than, you know, grieving the people who lost their lives and rebuilding buildings. That is intro level to the healing work that is being asked to be done with this land. And it was really the first time that I was shown there is a much deeper level of integration and healing that is being asked to be had in a lot of these spaces that have had these very intense energetic experiences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, what we're looking at here, especially in New Orleans, was a very deep and traumatic experience that not only happened to the people there, but like you said, to the land there. Even in just driving through the city on their raised highways, looking out, you can see the scars in the landscape of flooding and the way that the earth was drastically shifted in such a powerful way. You could see the water stains on the buildings. And this really speaks to the power that we have as individuals walking this path to help heal, to help hold space for communities who have experienced deep loss and experienced deep traumatic events. We are here to hold that space and to help alchemize that group consciousness and bring the frequency of love into these spaces.
Yeah, something that's coming through right now is, you know, really thinking about, and we'll get into this more when we talk about visiting Asheville after Helene, but it's really like this concept of, you know, where humanity is at spiritually, you know, being spiritual babies and being very in the dense physical reality. When something intense or traumatic happens to a space, we show up with our physical resources, right? Like we need to rebuild and we need to get people's houses rebuilt and we need to, you know, do all that. And sometimes we show up with emotional resources, right? Like, well, let's go give counseling and let's send in, you know, counselors and crisis volunteers and the Red Cross and things like that. There is a much deeper need in these moments for spiritual care, for people who are really embodied and aware of how these things work, ancestral trauma, trauma in the body, trauma in the light body, trauma in the land, shamans, these really tapped in people to the greater consciousness and spirituality and shamanic reality to go in and do that deeper level of healing work. Because if we just surface level give people crisis counselors, and it's well intentioned, right? But if we just focus on, well, let's just rebuild, right? That's what everyone else says. We're going to rebuild. Like 1 week after the floodwaters are gone, it's time to rebuild. If we are rebuilding on a shaky foundation, as you often like to say, then what it stands on is not stable. And personally, that's what we felt in that city. And so it was a really powerful activation in realizing, which totally prepared us for Helene, we need people of this consciousness and this awareness to go in and help these spaces heal on deeper levels.
I love so much that you bring that forward, because this call for deeper levels of healing and response to traumatic events is incredibly important. And what we're seeing in a lot of cities as we traveled was that underlying consciousness of the unhealed portions spiritually affecting and continuing to affect the city. And so we saw that in Galveston, for example. When we moved through that city, there was a deep energy of just, oh, I don't even know how to describe it, but it was almost like a city that was both alive and dead at the same time. And to be able to sit with those grids and be present with it and love it and heal it was a really wonderful opportunity.
Absolutely. So at this point, May has come and summer is approaching. And so as we have been on this journey, we chase the weather. We head north to Colorado for 2 weeks. And Colorado is beautiful, right? Like everyone knows, right? What I don't know if there's any bad things to say about Colorado, but honestly, it was really beautiful. And this was so healing for me because my father actually spent the greater portion of the second half of my life that he was alive living in Colorado, living in Denver. And I lived in Denver with him for a couple of months. And so I got to really connect with my dad and do a lot of really deep father healing. And, you know, the nature there is just exquisite. And we just had 2 weeks of flow is the only way I can describe it. Those were some of the best 2 weeks of this trip. Mm-hmm. If I honestly had to pick, it was just so beautiful and peaceful. And some of our favorite things were there. And the national parks are just exquisite there. And yeah, there's just endless good things to say. One of our favorite tiny towns was there, Golden, Colorado. We stayed right on a river and rode our bikes around this town. And we went rock hounding for the first time in Colorado. And it was just, I just have such fond memories of that. It's such a beautiful place. And yeah, I think it was a really great calm before the storm, if you will, mm-hmm. because after our 2 weeks in Colorado, we spent 2 weeks in Utah, and here we are, right? We're coming off this 2 week high. We're like, hey, we got this. Like, we're like veterans now. We've got this RV life down. Like, we're free. We just had Confluence, fell in love with Austin. We're like, oh, summer's here. I mean, to say that we were riding like one of the highest highs of this journey, I think the highest high.
Yeah, it was pretty close.
Yeah, it was incredible. And we get to Utah and we have this massive 2 week trip plan where we're visiting all five of their national parks in a line and, you know, all these amazing things we're going to do. And day one in Moab, I break my foot and the whole thing just gets shifted. And it was this, I don't even have words for the, I'm getting emotional. And we've talked about this on the show, so you can go back to that time around May of last year and listen to some of that content. But this was a powerful activation for us both. You in stepping into your masculine and your leadership, mm-hmm. and me in going deep into an ancestral and personal healing portal. The pain was undescribable. I could not walk. I could not pull my own pants up. I could not shower without you helping me. Like, it was really intense. And it was my second, because I had my tooth situation in Arizona, but my first like really, really major medical thing with no health insurance and being outside of that and having fully reclaimed my health sovereignty. So I did this without pain meds, without doctors, without any support. I literally got crutches at a thrift store and a boot from my aunt in Utah who had had a boot from when she injured her foot. So it was just, yeah, you know, it put a really big, what we perceived to be at the time, dampen on our summer, because here's the start of summer. I'm now going to spend my whole summer on this RV journey, this once in a lifetime thing with a broken foot. Our whole Utah plans, you know, were completely thrown. I had to be carried everywhere. You were carrying me around national parks. And this was the 2 weeks leading up to driving back to Northern California for Music and Sky, which was another event that we went to. And so it was this massive wrench in the plans and a really beautiful opportunity to not fall into victim consciousness, to not give up, to rely on each other, to go deep into those healing portals, and for me to be cared for and for you to really step into this leadership role of the masculine in this family. So yeah, that was, I mean, Utah's beautiful. It wasn't personally our state. Like, we definitely loved the national parks and recommend going to see them. And there's just so much beautiful nature out there. It wasn't personally our favorite.
Yeah, it was so interesting to me. Each time we cross the desert, it feels like God has a really intense activation waiting for us. And in this particular notion, it really did feel like an exodus and crossing the Utah desert to get back to California. And, you know, carrying you across different national parks and different experiences until we could locate you crutches was a really powerful bonding moment of trust and allowing you to surrender into a masculine container and really encouraging me to step up and be present and aware and serve the feminine in a loving and selfless way. And the whole journey throughout Utah, I mean, even crossing from Utah through to Nevada, if you're not familiar with that highway, there is an infestation of cannibalistic crickets. I know, we didn't know either. Wild.
Look it up. It's a real thing. They're massive and they're red and they die the highway and there's millions of them and they literally are cannibals.
And they create really hazardous road conditions, but there was just this experience of
we still have cannibalistic crickets underneath our trailer.
We do.
Like, the level of scrubbing to get up in underneath these wheel wells and get these crickets out.
We have carried that lesson with us throughout this whole journey, yes. And, like, even just visiting some of the off-grid communities in Utah and going and making those treks and seeing that just because we all get the call to go out and build doesn't mean that we're always ready to do so. And it's really important to act from a grounded place, because we can create one of two things: either more hardship for ourselves unnecessarily when we try and build too quickly, or we go out and we build the same thing that already exists here in a smaller fashion, thinking that it's going to be different. And so it's really important that we come from a really healed and grounded place before we try and build something new.
Yeah, absolutely. There was still nothing in Nevada. 6 hours of driving across the middle of that state on that highway, there was nothing but them crickets. And something that came of that lesson for me and that experience, it was, if we laugh about it now, it was actually horrifying. There's no way for you to avoid clearly driving over hundreds of thousands of these crickets and seeing them all over the sides of your car and in your wheel wells. And it is very dangerous, actually, because it literally puts a slickness on the road. It's something you can't even conceptualize if you haven't experienced it. It really showed me the destruction when cycles get out of balance, mm-hmm. right? When an ecosystem gets out of balance, when something is, yeah, just like out of that alignment, whether it's with people or energy or nature, and how human interference, you know, really impacts the environment that we live in, which we saw 50,000 miles of animals, you know, dead on the side of the roads, and just really seeing this impact of how, yeah, there wasn't really like a conscious solution to dealing with this. It was just kind of like, make everyone drive slower. And it was just this like really vile, like nasty experience. And I'm just watching this unfold, and there's like warning signs everywhere and alerts and this whole situation, but like not really any solution of how to deal with this other than spraying a ton of pesticides to try and kill these crickets. And it wasn't working. And you can just see it was almost like making the problem worse. And so it just brought a deep contemplation for me. And like, how do we relate to nature when something is out of balance, or we perceive it to be out of balance, or how do we adjust, you know, when something quote unquote infringes on our infrastructure or our way of life? Do we just literally plow through it and squish it on the side of the road and say, it is what it is, like they're in our space? Or do we bring a deeper consciousness to being in communion with our earth and realizing, no, actually, we are in their space, and we have dominion, which means stewardship, over this realm, and what a sacred role that really is.
Thank you for sharing this moment. I mean, it was a pretty visceral experience, like you said, and to hone in on that point about things being out of balance, this is what we see in our cities. We see a profound lack of balance and lack of nature in that they have been fully humanized. And in some states, so much so that there isn't even any vegetation within the cities for miles. It's just concrete and built structures and metal and asphalt. And we look at these cities on the extreme end of humanization, and we wonder why we're experiencing challenges with mental and spiritual health. It is going and being in union with nature that heals us, that brings us back home to our true selves. And we are called to bring balance back into our lives, back into our cities. And so this whole experience with the crickets and nature being out of balance was a really good reflection on how we can address how we live in unison with the earth and make changes so that we are in relationship to her and not in dominance of her.
Mm. You said something that I think is really worth mentioning, which now would be a good time to say, joke's on us. This is not going to fit in two parts. So there's going to be a third part to go over this second half of this 13 months. And so before we wrap it up here, I want to touch on one thing that you mentioned that I think that we kind of just quickly skirted over earlier, which is staying at communities. in this journey, I kept a very detailed, very long note on my phone of everywhere we stayed and every city we went, the dates. You know, you really have to plan this stuff out. And so I was keeping track of that, and I added it up, and we stayed at like 58 RV parks and just under 75 farms, communities, etc. And we were using Harvest Hosts, which is a service that it's like an app and you pay a membership fee. It's like $100-something a year. And then you get unlimited stays at farms, communities, businesses, museums, people's houses who are RVers who have hookups. They sign up and they let you come and stay. And so you get to experience these really cool places, like so many cool places. And we're going to tell you what our favorite one was in our next episode. You know, staying at these communities, we stayed at co-ops, we stayed at sovereignty communities, religious communities, eco communities, earthship communities. I mean, it was like farms, family compounds, like being able to experience so many different ways of getting out of the system and getting back into community and getting back on the land, and in really profound ways seeing what was working and what wasn't. And we've said this to a lot of people. We always asked the same question to a lot of these communities. And that question was, what is the greatest challenge that you face? Now, it doesn't surprise me at all. Every single person we asked, you might be surprised to hear, said the same thing. And that answer was the people, relating, being in community with other people, conflict, patterning. And, you know, it doesn't surprise me because, well, just number one, the core mission, right, of the show and of our journey and Loving Consciously and our new conscious relationship coaching program is conscious relating. And, you know, when we look out at the greater collective, this is not an all-inclusive statement. We largely see people who were not taught how to love. They were not taught how to healthily relate, how to manage conflict. You know, we have generations of traumatized children, really. And by that, I mean, with the utmost love, people who have the emotional and spiritual awareness of children, because humanity is a very spiritually stunted species, teaching people how to be good citizens and how to regurgitate information and how to pay taxes and how to work a 9-to-5 and, you know, really how to be in the system. And so it doesn't surprise me at all. It was, yeah, just really interesting to go and see all of these places and see so many people trying, and to be really honest, not a ton of success and very, very little thriving. You know, those small family ones were doing well, but the ones that were like broader community, they were struggling to keep people there. They were just like living day to day and in survival mode. And I truly believe it is because of that missing piece of conscious relating. And, you know, when we say conscious relating, like anybody can relate, right? But are we relating consciously? Are we relating in a way that is loving and intentional and effective and embodied? And so, yeah, just being able to like go and experience these communities, I don't think that we gave enough space to the endless amount, I couldn't even put a number on it, of people that we met and had the opportunity to talk to across varying climates, across varying, you know, geological and political landscapes, and to just really see, you know, from a middle of nowhere Mormon Utah compound to a sovereignty community in Texas to, you know, different eco villages in New Mexico. Like, there is no one way to do this. And I firmly believe it cannot be successfully done to be in a state of thriving, not just surviving, without a profound awareness of conscious relating and how to manage people dynamics and conflict.
Yeah, it's such a critical piece, because when we get together in community, it can sound really appealing. We're going to get out of the system. We're going to build something new. We're going to do the thing, right? However, when we come into community, it's a very deep level of healing that occurs, because for those of us who have been relating for pretty much all of our lives, right? In one way, shape, or form, be that family or friends or romantic partners, we can understand that conflict arises. We can understand that we trigger each other in ways where wounds activate other wounds so that we can heal together. And what I observed is a really high turnover rate in communities where conflict would arise and either somebody would leave the community in search of another one, or they would be ostracized from the community. And that leads to this unhealthy version of transient behavior in which people are avoiding the actual work of coming together in community and doing the healing work required to build a strong foundation. And ultimately, that is what's going to lead to humanity's success. Because when we can learn how to relate with one another consciously and work together in community, that is what's going to inform us to build stronger states, stronger nations, and ultimately a stronger and more cohesive world.
Yeah, it's so true. Looking at kind of a recap of where we're at, so we can close this out and leave you hanging with love for part three. At this point, we are about halfway through our 13 months. We have seen, I had to look at it, 26 out of 51 national parks. So we're halfway through the national parks, which is pretty wild because we've seen 10 out of 48 states. So we're only about 20% of the way through the states. 10 out of 48 of the states hold half of the national parks. And so even if you just did those 10 states, which, let's see if I could get them, Oregon, California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, Utah, Nevada, Mississippi, and Louisiana, mm-hmm. which I don't even think those ones have national parks, did they?
No, they did not.
Yeah, so 8 states. So Oregon, California, Arizona, New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, Nevada, and Utah. If you can do those 8 states, you can see 50% of the national parks in the U.S. That leg right there was epic. I would do it again. I would do it again in a heartbeat. It's so magical. And so here we are. We're about a fifth of the way through the states, halfway through the national parks, halfway through this journey. And we are on our exodus across the Nevada desert with cannibalistic Mormon crickets on our way back to Northern California, which, if you'll remember from the beginning of this episode, is where we started. And so here we are halfway through this journey, and we are literally looping back to right where we began. And everything kind of gets a little wild. And there's just this like massive turning point and decision point of this journey. So we can't wait to share that with you next time. And, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention that I'm realizing we haven't mentioned is we had zero breakdowns in that whole first 6.5 months, not once. It was such a blessing. Like, we had so many scary moments and close calls, but we never once broke down. Like, we were so divinely guided and protected. We never once didn't have somewhere to stay. We certainly had some wild experiences. I'm realizing now we didn't even mention the whole Utah fiasco, in which I'm like a week and a half after breaking my foot. And we sign up for this Harvest Host location, which is supposed to be this religious co-op compound in the middle of the Utah desert. Like, and we're talking like 2-hour drive to get to it, in the middle of nowhere, next to a rock hounding place. It's actually very famous. It's called the Dugway Geode Beds. And we were not told that it was miles and miles and miles of dirt road, which towing a trailer on a dirt road is awful. And we had damage by the end, like our propane cord snapped. And then we get there and we were also told there were hookups, and there were not hookups. It was literally people roughing it out in the middle of the desert. And we got to turn around and drive all the way back a few hours to an RV park. So that was another one of those fun adventures of you just never know what you're going to get. And there are literally people hours out into the middle of nowhere of this country roughing it out in the desert with a well and some solar panels. And yeah, so Utah was interesting. These crickets were interesting. And we make it back right where we started. And we'll come back next week to pick up from there. And in the meantime, just want to leave you all with so much love. And, you know, that first episode was really this theme of releasing and transmuting and transcending fear and attachments and control and identities. And this episode, you know, it really is about communion, and just really want to encourage you to seek deeper communion in yourself, in your relationships, in your life, with the earth, with God, and really start to pay attention and ask these questions of how you're relating, how you're relating with your resources, how you are consciously interacting with this world, because that is where the real change starts, and that is where real freedom and real healing and real sovereignty comes from. It's in those small moments within our life.
Mm-hmm. And keep in mind, you can do a journey of communion exactly where you are and exactly in the life that you're living right now. You don't have to sell everything that you own and go on a big old RV exodus to experience this. Although that's the path that we chose. You can go out into nature and your local area and sit and be and observe. And you'll find, just in getting out of the city and sitting with nature for an extended period of time, you'll find yourself. You'll find a relationship with this earth. And ultimately, you will experience communion with God.